5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind.
It was basically a cube with inside of sphere where the points of the cube were touching outside of the sphere.
This isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. It's a special bonus That UFO update, number 6, I believe. Remember back when these were going to be weekly, then I decided, nah, there's not always enough for weekly pods. But I felt I owed people a little bonus one this week because the Malcolm Robinson one came out a couple of days late. So this one, as usual, will go up on Patreon, patreon.com/thatufopodcast. First, a little bit early access for the Patreons over there supporting the pod. If you can, be great if you could. If not, it goes out free anyway. Nothing's hidden behind a paywall for long. But yeah, this one should be out within a day or two as well. So I've got Dan joining me as normal. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm great. It's a good Monday.
I said how you doing there and it kind of got blocked. So I've got a little bit of a cold slash hay fever slash not COVID, I don't think. So, you know, but yeah, we're recording anyway just to get this one out there because there's a few things. It. Oh yeah, you can't catch it virtually. Yeah, he's got his antivirus software going, so he can't catch COVID through his computer. A little geek joke for people. First off, want to give out our well wishes to Calvin Parker. I didn't know if you had Twitter last week, but Calvin Parker obviously was one of the former guests on the podcast. Is an elderly gent with a fascinating story, obviously of an abduction that took place in Pascagoula many, many decades ago. However, he has had cancer recently and has had to have an operation to try and get himself well again. So all our best wishes go out to Calvin as well. It's yeah, a really cool story, Calvin's, isn't it, Dan? Like, it's pretty famous now as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If people aren't familiar, they should jump over to Google and just chuck his name in and have a read. It's a really strange case as well.
Or they could go back and listen to that episode I recorded with them. Either or, you know, Google.
Too, yeah.
Or, yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of cool material out there as well. But there's a real honesty to his story. So all the best to Calvin, and hopefully he's well again soon. And, you know, he's not a big social media presence, but obviously Phil Mantle and whatnot. And there's some movies and TV shows in the works to get his story out to a new audience as well. So all the best, Calvin, in your recovery. Just a few updates for people as well. Some of these I've talked about online, not cryptically, not deliberately, just things weren't confirmed at the time either. But Steve Bassett will be the guest on the podcast this week. So if you haven't already, I've had quite a few, send over your questions for Steve at UFOUAPAM@gmail.com. Or you can DM them, but ideally, if you could please email them, it's much easier to keep track of the volume of questions that come in these days as well. Paul Sinclair, British ufologist, should be coming on really soon as well. We're just looking to confirm a date for that one. Ryan Sprague will make his second appearance on the podcast very soon, in conjunction with something I'm going to discuss in just a minute. And I've got Brandon Fugel lined up in the coming weeks for his first of many, I'm sure, appearances on the podcast. This has been in the works for quite a while, but of course it ties in nicely with the new series of The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. I'll get it right for our US listeners, or if you're in the UK, The Curse of Skinwalker Ranch, as myself and Dan found out recording last year.
It's
a UK thing, isn't it? It's like, it's The Curse of Skinwalker. It's a secret.
I'm intrigued by a secret, though, whereas I'm put off by a curse, you know?
No, that's why we watch the American ones legally, of course. But yeah, Brandon will be coming on to discuss the new series, what we can look forward to with that, and answer some more questions as well. So really looking forward to speaking to Brandon. However, there should be a lot more podcasts dropping over the next kind of 8 to 12 weeks anyway for what I'm going to discuss now. So Contact in the Desert, even, is one of the biggest UFO expo conferences in the world. And this year's Contact in the Desert is going ahead in 87 days' time from now, which is the 25th of June to the 28th of June 2021. You can check out all the details at contactinthedesert.com. I did put a poster up of the event on my Twitter. You can follow them on Twitter as well. I will find out. Dan, can you do some jamieing for me and find out the Contact in the Desert official Twitter feed for me? I just don't want to log off my Twitter because I've got something pulled up already. But Dan will grab that. There are a whole host of really cool guests, some of which have appeared on the podcast already. A lot of them, of course, hasn't. I can't interview everyone for the podcast, but what I do have is free rein over who I can get on the pod. So there's going to be some long-form interviews. I did put out to all of you asking who you would like to see, and a lot of big names obviously came back. So I'll get as many as I can on for proper interviews for the podcast, not only to talk about their appearance at Contact in the Desert, but more. Dan, I think, has the Twitter handle now.
I do indeed. It is a CITD conference.
That's the one. There you go. So at CITD conference, and you can follow Contact in the Desert on the Twitter, but you can find it on Facebook and all the usual places as well. Or you can just go to the website, if you're old school like that, at contactinthedesert.com for all information. But yeah, so a lot of those guests will be appearing. Ryan Sprague, who is one of the youngest guests of Contact in the Desert this year, very deserving as well, will be there, and we'll be speaking to him all about it. But what you'll get is, like I say, those long form interviews where I get to speak to the guests on different topics, you know, ancient archaeological sites, remote viewing, UFOs, abductions, ET experiences, all of the above. But what I'm going to do is also record a series of 10 to 15 minute preview interviews where guests who I can't get on long form or for whatever reason, and I'll release those leading up to the event as well over the coming months. And that'll allow you to kind of pick and choose any guests that you want to have a little bit of a listen to, find out what they're going to be talking about at Contact in the Desert, and just hear little snippets and previews as well. And depending on feedback, potentially get some of those on for long form interviews too. So Dan, I ran that one past, thought that sounded like an all right idea. So if you don't like it, blame Dan.
That's fair.
But yeah, there's some good ones on there. Dan, anyone particular you're kind of looking forward to hearing from?
Well, I'm intrigued to hear you follow up with a lot of people that you've interviewed already, because a lot's happened since you spoke to them, and I think they're going to have some things to share. There are some ancient civilization lectures that are going to be happening that I'm really intrigued by. I think you'll get some great interviews out of those guys.
Yeah, looking forward to that. So you'll see me doing lots of talking about Contact in the Desert and getting those ones out for you all as well. And you can obviously hear some names that you've heard from before, maybe some names as well that you're not too familiar with. There are still guests to be added. I was speaking to the organisers last week as well. So keep an eye out on that one, folks. Should be a lot of fun. And selfishly, it's really going to help me that given our, not mine and Dan's, but mine and my wife's baby is due in about 5 weeks, I might need like a week or two just to kind of help out there. So it might be good to have a couple of interviews in the can for those weeks where I'm indisposed, folks. All right. So hang with me around about early May. It might be a bumpy couple of weeks, but that's my problem, not yours. little bit of an update then, obviously, but on that UFO update, Dan, a lot's happened in the last couple of weeks around the UAP task force report. We have heard everything from it's coming out to it's not coming out to it's coming out with some provisos. It was always, it was never going to be clear cut, was it, this report? However, no. Dan has an exclusive. No, he doesn't. But Dan, what are your thoughts on what we're...
I wish.
What do you think we're going to get on this report?
I think we're going to get something that a lot of us in the community have kind of known for a while. So to us, it's going to be a little underwhelming. But the point of having... This isn't ours. This isn't our adversaries. This is something way beyond anything made by man. Like that's crazy enough to almost upend the whole world in and of itself. And we can already see this conversation moving from entertainment into politics. And it's just going to galvanize that even more when those in positions of power have a proper report to reference, you know, instead of just, if they're intrigued, turn into something like Google and coming across
David Wilcock,
you know.
Yeah. We've had some interviews, haven't we, the last couple of weeks, and I'm just going to, obviously, Lou Elizondo, former guest on the show, someone we're lucky to have somewhat of a contact with as well. He's been really great, hasn't he, in the last few months on social media at speaking to people and responding back to people. And like he says, and this is true, he does read, I think, everyone's messages, because you can see he tries to like stuff, and he's not a huge social media guy, but he really is making the effort. And I think UFO Twitter particularly is appreciating that presence. Lou done a series of interviews on Fox, Newsmax, and a few different outlets. Something that he speaks great. And again, it's just great to hear that conversation being had in a serious way, especially stateside. I was frustrated about the video packages and the pictures accompanying Lou. As we know, some of those videos ripped off of Twitter, which is essentially what they were, show, I don't want to say like fakes, but it was basically stuff that people created on apps deliberately and posted to their Twitter feeds.
One was a UFO camera app. You can find I put together a reference video with all the different effects from that on my YouTube. So if you're curious to, you know, add those bits to your filter, feel free to go have a look at that. But yeah, one was made with that app, and the other one was a missile contrail, that just because of the angle that you're looking at from, it kind of looks like a saucer emerging from the clouds, but it's nothing of the sort. I get why they were used. They're probably just in a database that someone's typed in UFO and just pulled the video from. But I agree with Lou's statement that you posted, that it's really frustrating to see those things when we have the Navy videos, which are 100% legit to use instead. And it was great to see that when Christopher Mallon was on, they didn't use those prosaic and hoax videos anymore. It was just strictly the Navy videos, which I thought was great.
That when Chris Mallon was on Fox?
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. I emailed the senior political editor the day after Lou was on and asked about the usage of the footage, and he never got back to me, but that's interesting that the next time they had someone on that they didn't use any of that dodgy stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm taking full credit for that one.
Well, it speaks to the power of having the conversation, right? It could be you, it could be, you know, Lou might have spoken to them, or they might have seen Lou's statement, or it doesn't really matter. The point is, by having a productive conversation instead of just getting angry about it,
yeah,
it changed, it got better.
Absolutely. And like I say, whatever reason, they kind of fixed that for the next one, whether it was potluck, we'll see next time. But it was good to see when Chris Mellon went on that they did use the official footage. Lou's statement, for those that didn't see it, I asked him how he felt about those videos. And let's be honest, this is probably someone who's an intern at Fox News who's told, go and get me some UFO stuff. We need it for a video package. Lou doesn't see it. The host doesn't see it beforehand. And I doubt even the editor or the guy running it sees it. They just trust it. Whatever's there, and they throw it on there. Not that it makes that right, but that's probably what happens, folks. So
yeah.
I asked Lou how he felt about those video packages, including some known fakes or kind of misleading videos. And he said, although I am encouraged by the media's interest and pursuit of this enigmatic topic, I remain frustrated by the silly and sometimes fake photos and videos that often accompany the broadcasts when legitimate footage is available and far more compelling. That's it. So yeah, so it was a thank you to Lou for getting in touch and giving us that comment as well, because we do appreciate that. Obviously, John Ratcliffe, former DNI, I believe is the correct initials.
Yeah, that's right.
he also appeared as well, which is a relatively new name to those of us in the UFO community watching this stuff online. He hadn't appeared before. You've got, obviously, Rubio. Is it Warren or Warner? Warren?
Warner.
Warner. Because I was talking about Larry Warren yesterday. Totally different guy. And we're used to Lou and we're used to Chris Mellon, obviously, being on these video packages. So we've got a new name to add to it. And it was a pretty cool interview. What were your thoughts on John Ratcliffe's comments that he made?
It blew my mind, to be honest, because he was recently in the position. You know, we're not talking a decade ago or anything like that. We're talking about a guy who, I think he took office in May 2020, and he was there for a few months, which means he was briefed when all this was going on. So if you're looking to anyone as kind of an authority on the mood inside of the Pentagon, I think he'd be a fair barometer for it.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And again, it's refreshing just to see that conversation being had. Like you say, Dan, I think that the main point, the best point you've made there, of which you make many good points, is the fact this guy is new and fresh in that office, seeing the atmosphere, hearing the conversations as they happen now. It's not as great as it is someone who was there 20, 30, 40 years ago. Even 15 or 10 years ago, they've been there now. They know what these conversations are like, what's being had, and he's come out and still made a statement. It's definitely changing the tone, and we can still hope that the task force report, if I'm confident it still comes out, it comes out with at least some sort of assessment that requires further scientific study. But not long to go now, folks.
There needs to be something that's just underlined to pull the intrigue in from to pull people in who can study this stuff. What we don't want is for, you know, like the end of Blue Book, where they kind of said, nothing to see here. And then it was put on a shelf and then not looked at again. We've got the science and the equipment to properly study this now. And people like Avi Loeb again. So, you know, let's go.
That's it. And hopefully more and more names come into the fray as well. And we see more podcasts, Joe Rogan getting some of these guys on, other high profile podcasts as well. Even with, there's another name that I forgot to mention. James Fox should be on the podcast hopefully next month. I'm in contact with James now. So it'll be good to get him on as well. James is pretty good at teasing stuff as well, isn't he? That he may or may not know and stuff may not be coming out, which is always kind of good to hear.
I'm really intrigued to ask James about a particular thing. He has a neighbor that he's mentioned called Walter Murch, who is kind of one of the biggest heavy hitters in Hollywood in terms of editing. He is responsible for helping to make Final Cut Pro, for example. But he wrote a book about editing and how it relates to how we dream. And there's a really interesting connection there with consciousness and dreaming and UFOs that I kind of want to know if they've had any conversations about it.
Nice. Well, you can ask him because you can come on that one as well, Dan. James Fox should be coming on, and I'm just getting a date with Tim McMillan as well. So loads happening, loads of guests, loads of names. I will try and get as much content out there for you as I can, but obviously keeping the quality levels as high as possible too. But yeah, so there should be loads coming up over the coming months and well into the summer as well. And the conversation, as soon as that task force report comes out and is published, will be ramping up then as well. So look out for all that to come, folks. We thought we would add a little bit of an extra part into the update as well. A few weeks ago on Twitter, I asked you, what for you is the most overlooked, under-researched, or least reported on aspect of UFOs or UAP? And you didn't let me down, and you came in with loads of really interesting comments and ideas. So I thought myself and Dan would have a read through these. Apologies if we miss any off or not, but the idea is we're just going to read through them. Give people some food for thought. If you want to go back and find the tweet, it was on the 14th of March at 11 minutes past 10 on the UFO UAP AM, that UFO podcast feed. But we'll talk through these and pick up on a few to go on that. You got time for that, Dan?
Absolutely.
Really awkward if Dan said no, given we don't exist to do that, yeah. So first up, we had UK UAP. They thought that overlooked was the ancient esoteric links to the phenomenon. Under-researched, we talk about a unified theory in physics, but what about one bridging the converge of ufology, parapsychology, and the paranormal? Some big words there. And least reported are the UAP or UAP effects on altered states of consciousness.
Ooh, I like this one.
I thought you would, Dan. Yeah, that's yeah. Go on, Dan. Thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The nice thing about the conversation about UFOs is that eventually we're going to get to the point where we actually have to start considering altered states of consciousness. And it is something we're researching now, but it's down a slightly different path in terms of legalization of psychedelic substances in different parts of the world. There's actual research going into this. I don't know if you remember a paper I sent you a few days back that was quite lengthy and just had a lot of GIFs of bouncing balls. And it was all about scientists coming up with a way that people could explain their experience of time when they were under the influence of these substances. And it's kind of starting to get to the point where we might be able to have a compound that can change our perception of time. And it brings me back to what Lou said about different life forms experiencing different parts of the burning end of a cigar. So I'm excited. I think all this stuff is going to just crash together and we'll suddenly kind of go, oh, of course, it's all part of the same piece.
And that's never something, especially those kind of psychedelics or gateway drugs, whatever you want to call them, that I've touched on before in a podcast with various people in different interviews and speaking on the roundtables like yourself and Gaucho and Dave, but never had like a guest on to exclusively discuss. One of the guests at Contact in the Desert is Dr. Andrew Gallimore, who I wasn't familiar with, but I'm told he is really good to speak to on that topic as well. So that is one that you may hear about on the podcast soon, hopefully, as well. So yeah, really good shout. Dave Smethurst, we like Dave and sends in a lot of really good questions as well. He mentions underground or deep sea bases and possible crypto terrestrial origins. So the under the water thing, that this is one that really came to prominence for me when you watch Unidentified and a whole series, especially series one, when kind of Sean and Lou got together for the first time in a long time, and they were going out at sea, weren't they? And they were meeting fishermen, and they were always by the water or by a pier or by a harbour.
Right.
And like, they were almost constantly, almost pointing constantly at the water, going, look down here. We should look down here, shouldn't we? So I always found that really intriguing ever since then. And it's something that a lot more people start to go to now, don't they?
They do. I'd point people to Preston Dennett. He's done some great work on underwater bases, especially the one near Catalina, which has been said to have. When I say they, I wish I remembered the names, but scientists, people that went and studied this, they did kind of sonar scans. And occasionally when they've done it, there has been a big mass under the water that hasn't been there the next time they've gone back. So it's really intriguing in terms of maybe a moving base or, you know, something that is maybe here, but not quite here. I don't want to speculate too much because I can get crazy, but it's intriguing.
Could that be a pod of whales?
Well, it could be, but these kind of things have like a signature. So a pod of whales, you'd be able to differentiate it from something that looked like, I don't know, an underwater building, for example.
Underwater seagulls? En masse? No, we've been there before, haven't we? That's one we've done to death now. But yeah, really good shout from Dave. Matt Hurley, that if ETs can manipulate abductees' minds, what might they be doing at a macro level to world leaders? Oh, that's conspiracy territory, isn't it? Like, in a good way, though.
Kind of. When you go back in history and you start reading about conflicts, there's a consistent theme that everyone is serving their god. So whether we're looking at the Spanish and the Mayans or, you know, any other conflict in the world, it's all at the behest of gods. And we know there's kind of a bit of crossover and maybe a connection between the old idea of Greek gods and what we call gods and what we call UFOs. So it could be all to do with that.
Really good shout. And again, we're hearing as part of this task force report, some of the pushback potentially could be from those within government who are very religious, and they're looking at this from a strictly angelic / demonic aspect. And I think that was something when I spoke to Ryan Bledsoe, he used the phraseology that I liked of let's put some of the language we've used in a box and throw it out the window. And he was just trying to make the point, not that we should forget about it, but let's just look at the different labels we're putting on things. And just because we call it something different doesn't mean that they couldn't be linked. And
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's a really different way of looking at it. And if it gets these conversations going, then you know, hopefully it keeps it kind of moving forward as well.
Just on a basic level, going between the UK and America, what we call the pavement and the sidewalk is different. And these terms are exactly the same. I really liked Ryan's point in your interview with him, because he's right. Saying angel to someone is a loaded term. They'll have ideas of what that looks like.
Potato, potato, as the saying goes. Mike Tipping, China. Some reports get out, but perhaps it's fair to assume those are just the tip of the iceberg. So we always talk about the superpowers, don't we? And USA, Russia, China. And Russia and China, just to be fair to them, seem to be far better at keeping all manner of secrets and, you know, clandestine operations and thoughts and projects under wraps, more so than maybe those in the Western world or the US in particular.
I think that's partly because of the kind of media bubbles that we're all in these days as well. You know, maybe if we lived in China, we'd see a lot more of it. But we certainly don't see a lot of it from where we are, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? I've watched on YouTube, reports from various different countries, particularly South America, where you see, because it's not in English, they don't necessarily have the same reach. And unfortunately, I wish I spoke Spanish or another language, you know, but you see these reports come out from Brazil or Argentina or Mexico, and they're on serious looking news outlets talking about different sightings and whatnot. And it doesn't have the same reach, does it? Because it's not on an English speaking network, which is a shame. But yeah, so that can happen the world over, like you say. JD Ocean, probably organic experience or stories. The thinks of Tic Tac is overreported, while the experience or stories are underreported. And he names Stuart Davis as doing some groundbreaking work in this realm, however, on aliens and artists. That's a good one. Barry 2.0, Chupa Chupas, more widespread than realised. Also linked to that, we underappreciate the phenomenons linked to large bodies of water, which we touched on. Cheers, Barry. Graham. He mentions that where the Tic Tac was coming from before the Nimitz encounter started, Kevin Day stated the traces were dropping in from, and he gives some different heights and altitudes, which was the limit of the coverage potentially. Did any other agency track them beforehand or after? Have other UAPs been picked up at higher altitudes? I believe, and I mentioned to Graham on that thread, that when we spoke, or when I spoke to PJ, Gary Voorhees and Kevin Day on the roundtable, they mentioned, and I think Gary brought up, that the Tic Tacs were picked up by another agency on the coast. They wouldn't allude as to who, but I imagine some agency that can track things coming in from a far higher altitude, if not space. And they had been tracking them for some time as well. Was that right, Dan?
Yeah, that's right. We've had reports of a land-based radar picking them up, and also allusions to baiting the Tic Tacs.
Yeah.
And the various craft there. So someone knew what was going on and they were ready to watch.
It certainly seems, and I think it's fair, and this is just assuming, okay, but more than one set of eyes were on these Tic Tacs at the time.
Yeah.
The incident, people forget, wasn't one day. It was between 7 and 10 days this went on for. So if other agencies or other groups were watching these, it could have been more than one, could have been more than two, then that could be a really good reason why people turned up on these aircraft carriers as quickly as they did after these incidents happened.
We kind of have a repeat as well, right? The deck logs went missing for those ships for those particular dates. Lou and Chris have said how concerning that is, because it's just not the done thing. And now we have another event with the USS Kidd and three other ships where the deck logs for, I'm fairly sure it's 15 days, but multiple days, I'll say, are just missing. Someone's got them. Someone took them. And they're crazy events as well. You know, if those other deck logs that are missing are anything like what we've managed to, I say we, what Dave Beatty, Mark, and I forget the other person who published the work, but the guys that published that article, if it's anything like what they got, then it's incredible. And we need that out.
Very much. Next one was Bob Fideman. Bob said he listed a few different points. So whether or not they are manned vehicles, and he uses the term manned loosely, he says, whether or not they are invisible to some of us, yet visible to others. I put a lot of stock into that one, just giving my own experiences and hearing other people's. whether or not the vehicle lights are for our benefit or theirs. It's a really interesting one. And whether or not they are from a point of the future. For me, I always like the conversation around that. Do we all see the same thing? And what interview was it with George Knapp interview recently that I done? I like that George Knapp brought up on that interview that the Batman balloon, and I'm doing the inverted air quotes for that one, the Batman balloon photograph, there are multiple photographs from that same event as pilots circled the object, and George claims that those other photographs show different shapes. And again, we always call it the Batman balloon, and I'm guilty of that as well. There is no Batman photo on it. This was just someone comparing a very, very similar shape. But there's someone like George saying there are multiple photographs from that event, and it either changes or shows different shapes as they go around it as well.
It's very intriguing, isn't it? The ability to be able to show people different things. And I posted a few videos to Twitter when you put this interview
up. You did, yeah,
you did. Because there were some shapes that people had made on a 3D printer where, depending on how you were looking at them, they were either a group of circles or a group of squares or a group of just a weird-looking shape. So we can do that already in a way. I don't know that we can do it in an aircraft, but the concept is there, you know?
Yeah, that's it. So it's being open to possibilities. Bob also mentions, did NASA stop funding SETI because they already have evidence of ETs? Let's not bring up Seth Shostak after the quotes from yesterday. The next one was...
I think of SETI like someone sat by the phone waiting for someone to ring when the person they want to ring is sat next to them in the chair.
Yes, yeah. Geo brings up the connection to subsequent paranormal experiences thereafter, and that's something I've talked about in various shows, and Thomas Winterton talked about those in the hitchhiker phenomenon. George Knapp, I thought was very telling when I spoke to him and asked him about it off the back of one of the listener questions, and he didn't really want to go into it, but that experience sounds like it definitely had a bit of a profound effect on him.
It's a scary part of the whole phenomena, really. Some of us, I've had some weird things happen around me this week, and I've been sending voice messages to Sean Cahill as they've happened, and he's kind of helped me through them. But my reaction to them compared to my mum's reaction to them, who witnessed something moving with me, she freaked out and just left the house. Whereas I sat down and kind of thought, I need to work my way through this and figure out what actually happened, if it was what we think it was. And they're two very different reactions. You know, that's one person that's ready for the conversation and one person that just is not ever going to be ready for it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, people are going to want me to probe you on that one, Dan.
Well, I mean, basically, I've been experiencing sounds and objects moving. And when I say sounds, I mean kind of like a low hum kind of buzzing, but in a space where there was nothing. One point, my dog was barking at the curtain, and it was at the base of the curtain, and I could only hear it when I kind of could be down. And then the one that I had a witness to was just, there was a knife on the side, and the knife, there was nothing around, we weren't near it, the knife just moved. Just outright moved across the surface of the kitchen counter. That was a little bit crazy, but that was the recent one that I said there was a witness and got very different reactions.
Yeah, me and Dan never spoke about that beforehand, so that's me hearing that one for the first time as well, folks. But
I keep you some good stuff for the podcast, see?
Yeah, thanks. Cheers. Why do you think that happened?
I don't know, but this kind of stuff is getting more prevalent. The more I notice it, the more I notice it, and the more it seems to happen. I don't know if it's happening around me all the time, and I just wasn't aware of it before, but I feel like there's a little bit of a hitchhiker thing going on.
Is that from experiences where you've seen craft outside or lights from that point of view, do you feel?
Yeah, exactly. I think something shifted, and I don't really understand what's happening, but it's happening nonetheless. And it all comes after, you know, the year where I've been indulging in CE5 and meditation and trying to kind of step into that luminal space, we'll say.
Interesting. That's something we'll definitely follow up on then in future.
Sure.
Look out for Dan being on the podcast properly.
My I say plan properly, is as a guest. Next time I hear the noise, that I just keep my phone with me all the time now so I can record it. And at the very least, then I'll have something to show instead of just a story.
Awesome. That's really good. Thanks for sharing. Clayton M. Davis mentions abduction experiencers who report seeing human military onboard crafts. That's one for another time, definitely. But that's an interesting one. Sarah Collins, commonalities amongst experiencers, claims of genetic manipulation, physical side effects, telepathic abilities. We had Dan Warren, anything water-related, use or collection of water, travel through water, the originate from the oceans comment from a few months ago. So yeah, that's something we touched on earlier. Complete reports, the Audible Aussie says, of just hot topics still reporting. Adam Reed, just the sheer amount of reports that have gone on for decades. As far back as I can remember as a child, there have always been tales and stories of UFOs. It's just astonishing how the subject has always been swept under the rug. Well, hopefully not for too much longer, but at least we're going to get something in the form of the task force report coming out to move it forward. I can't see the task force report. I think we've accepted now. I never thought this anyway from the start, but it was never going to be okay, here's what we know, but it was going to be a way to move the conversation forward in a positive way.
Did you see the Canadian report that came out recently? Jordan from Nighttime Podcast posted the 2020 UAP report from Canada. And there was a little tidbit in there that I was curious about. We're basically prior years have on average 3-5% of all sightings can't be explained. So they're the, you know, the blue book anomalies. 2020 had 13%. So over 1 in 10 cases were unexplainable. So I feel like the activity is on an uptick, and it's not necessarily completely down to the processes of government.
Do you know what? I was speaking to Malcolm Robinson about this yesterday. And if you haven't checked out the podcast, it's myself speaking with my first Scottish guest, Malcolm Robinson, a bit more of an old school ufologist, but some really interesting conversation in there. And he was talking about, you know, that it's the 1% or the 3% or the 5% of cases that remain unexplained that are really of interest. And my point back to that was that not even just that, people have to remember that I think only 1% of any sightings are reported anyway. So if we are saying that 95% are there in Canada, well, 87% of cases were explained and 13% weren't, that 100% is made up of probably less than 1% of all sightings. That's a hell of a lot of them that aren't being reported on, aren't being reported because people have been able to identify or just not bothered. Or, let's be honest, I have never reported for all the stuff I've seen, officially reported anything.
I reported one, my first one, and that was it. After that, it was a lengthy process, and there was just a lot to put in and a lot they was asking me about. And I just thought, well, I mean, that was the reason I made that little shortcut, so I could record them faster in my own way,
notes. You also feel, don't you, like, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't go anywhere. I mean, it is a database, but what are they doing with it?
But it's just, again, if everyone done it, maybe it would make a difference. But yeah, but the big phone home is obviously coming up pretty soon. And that's something I'll talk about very soon on future shows as well. Where are we? Dr. Bean, any possible connection with religion? Kim Jelen, that if there are aliens walking among us, what do they look like? How can we tell? Do they have a normal lifespan or just come and go? How do they do it and why? Really good idea. Rob Shepherd, worldwide military encounters that could show up and down swings, show up and down swings,
like in quantity.
Oh yeah, up and down swing. Yep, cool. Yep, sorry, just my grammar reading that one out. UAP news at UAP news that oftentimes they travel faster than we have the ability to see. These types of events are only caught only after later video review. I think there's a really good video that was released. Was it last year from Colorado, is it a drone?
Colorado.
Is that
and
the
it
one
kind of banks as it comes down the hill and then shoots past? Yeah, yes. They were filming on a drone. Yeah.
That's the one, yeah. The daytime is pretty cool. It's going incredibly quick, and that is one of those you would not have probably seen that with the naked eye.
No, not at all.
Or you would have thought it was a bug or something in your eyeline or whatever it may have been. Like, but it literally, that's a really cool video if people can check that one out.
A beaver Utah, sorry, not Colorado.
Utah is good enough. You pulled that one off the top of your head. SEQLD UAP Nazca Mummies, that's gone quiet. Mac Panama, claims of Tom DeLong. He was and probably still is in contact with those in the know. He has made some bold and fascinating statements on past interviews and social media posts. Is no one even interested in knowing more or discussing? The Tom DeLong thing, I'm still, and I brought this up with George Knapp, who obviously gave a good argument why, but it's disappointing, Tom DeLong's silence, because he was quite happy to milk in the UFO Twitter glory with some of his statements, and when TTSA was really kind of ticking along nicely. And then there have been major changes, not just little changes, major, major changes in that structure and direction of the company. He, in my opinion, and I've got to preface my opinion, he owes an interview to someone, not me, someone with a far bigger audience and bigger podcast, bigger TV show, you know, whatever, to discuss what happened. He needs to sit down with a George Knapp or a Joe Rogan and talk about the company and what happened and why Lou and Chris and Steve and all that have went their separate ways as quickly as they did. And just the general change in direction of the company. So yeah, for me, that's something he does owe the people.
He's going to be, there's a new album coming out. They've almost finished that. And he's got Monsters of California coming out. So I'm expecting some media conversations around those things. And hopefully people will ask him.
And you would think that Monsters of California, the audience for that was largely going to be the crowd that have followed TTSA as well, especially the hardcore that's going to want to see it. There's a lot of people who could really be put off by what's happened to even see that. So he's got a little bit of social media kissing up to do, I think.
I'm hoping that when we see that film, that it's kind of in a similar vein to the fictional I'm doing, the Bunny Ears Secret Machines books, that it kind of plays with fact and fiction in that same way.
I think that's what a lot of us are expecting. I don't want to sound sanctimonious either when I say about Tom O's social media explanations, but again, he was really happy to do lots of shouting and a lot of us got behind him. And you do feel personally let down. And I'm someone who didn't invest in them. I bought a hoodie and some stickers and stuff. And Dan, I sent you one of the t-shirts. Like, and it's like,
thank you.
You know, you were repping and you were, you're welcome. You were supporting the company though. And I didn't have the money to throw at them that other people put substantial amounts of money, because it wasn't cheap to invest even at a basic level. But yeah, that's been disappointing for me. And I definitely feel there's been too much silence on his end. Pint-sized Farmer makes the point that of the negative poltergeist activity that often accompanies UFO encounters, as Dan touched on there, the connection between the paranormal and UFOs. Why does a UFO encounter often lead to disturbing spirit encounters, such as moving knives on the countertop, Dan, I suppose, on that one.
I think there's some effect with the brain's filter. That's what I would say on that. As soon as you kind of see something that breaks the filter doesn't go back to how it was.
The door's cracked open a little bit. We'll fire through a few more of these, folks, because we wanted to keep this one short as a bit of a bonus for you. And for those who maybe don't have the time or the will to listen to one of the longer interviews and me rambling on, we'll get this fired out and finished off. So Chris Fowler had posted a video in the chat as well of a UK sighting from 1994. Check that one out. You've got a Erin, who's been really good keeping in touch as well on the podcast. Thanks, Erin. USOs, everything water related. I'm going to pronounce this terribly, but Gelrich Sagnius. What happens next after we have official confirmation and open contact? How will humanity integrate with interstellar community and ET civilizations? Someone commented, funnily, we give them COVID and tax them for visiting. You know, probably not far off. Dystopia Drifter, cases of experiencers eliciting a response from UFOs. And he's put an article up there as well for people to check out. Adam Fenrich, every year dozens of unobstructed sightings of extraordinary craft from lucid witnesses who have no desire for the attention the report could bring. Their reports are either a fabrication or a historic event worthy of study, potentially. Stephen West, USOs in plain sight. Jeffrey Lander, an actual assessment of course of action. Obviously, the government knows something we don't. They act like nothing exists. Render 365, probably everything that came out of Bentwaters. That's one to go to back into the archives for. Full stop. Why all cases sightings seem to be unique, commonalities in shape behaviour, but pretty much different every time. That's one I've discussed a couple of times on the podcast as well. You can deep dive back into those. Big question from NARCAP. I think folks that are doing real research, meeting science or academic research publication standards don't get a lot of attention, though they are carrying the ball. There are only a few that I know of. Authors and their studies DM me for names and papers. That's fair. Totally opinion as well. But there are so many people studying this that I get why some might feel they're being left out or missed off, you know, but everyone has different audiences and different reach. And like, my podcast has an audience, but not everyone that listens to Ryan Spraggs comes over and listens to mine, and not everyone that listens to mine listens to Black Vault. Not everyone that listens to Black Vault listens to Jimmy Church. And that goes the same for anyone doing research as well. People are aware of different things. And as much as, you know, people might see me as, I don't know why, but potentially some of bit of an expert, or, you know, people send me some amazing stuff to look at and digest and comment on, I'll give my thoughts and opinions, but I am far from an expert. I'm just really interested and like to ask questions. And that's where I hand over to people like Dan and Dave and all that to pass comment far better than myself. What do you think on that, Dan?
Well, you say you defer to me and Dave, but I know Dave and I feel exactly the same as you just explained. You know, we all have our skills. We all have our different ways of communicating. Mine is mostly through visual stuff like art and things like that. Yours is through doing great interviews. Dave's is kind of probably a little bit of both because he does his magazine. You know, Andreas is focused on the activism and he's really great at digital marketing. And then NARCAP is great at producing proper, thoroughly researched reports. And there are a few others like that as well. You know, it takes an army. And I think we have a great one.
Yeah, and that's it. And I'm not a guy for sitting reading papers and studies, and Dan knows that as well. Dan will tell you how often I message him and say, what's this all about? Or give me the bullet points. What's the gist of this? And Dan's the guy that will go and do that. Not for me, but he will read those for himself. But I'm not a details guy. I like the high level and the discussion off the back of it. But yeah, there's definitely a place for a whole load of different avenues of attack on this subject. Kevin Brackley says abductions. Rogan Seth, General McCausland, his relationship to UAP, DeLong and Elizondo. After that, we had a few on cattle mutilations, points of origin, BWP, everything that's happened since December 2017, crop circles, and a few more as well, folks. If I've not read out your name for something or what, there was a whole load on there. So it's a thread worth checking out, and it's something that we'll potentially come back to for a roundtable as well. And I'll be putting out some more topics pretty soon. As you have heard on this roundup, and it's let us update you as well a little bit in audio form, what's coming up on the podcast over the next few months, at least, it's going to take us up. There's a lot of content coming out, a lot of discussion to be had to keep us going at least until that UAP Task Force report comes out. And then the ball game no doubt changes in some way, shape or form. Dan, any final comments before we head off? Oh, Dan. Have you recently put out and or made any digital art that might be worth talking about?
I have. I made NFT art.
Okay, thanks, Dan. Bye. No, I'm joking. Dan was explaining this to me before very well, but I still don't understand. But Dan had tweeted this out. If you want to do a little bit of advertising for yourself, Dan, what you've put online.
Sure. So people may have seen it around and in the news that there have been some art sales of digital art that have kind of been taken off and gained a lot of attention. And it's a new form where essentially you can make an original piece of art in a digital form. So even if you make, you know, you copy and paste the file, it's still not the original one. So essentially I've decided to jump into that space. I was super inspired by the guys at the Debrief, Michael, and he did an interview with the Eclectic Method on Twitter who spoke about the different possibilities of the medium. So I took a week to kind of learn and jump in and produce something that I thought was worth immortalizing on the blockchain. Something I found quite funny was that I had to, as part of it, because the files need to be available in, you know, 10, 15, 20 years time, even if I lose them, you have to upload them somewhere where they made available. And that place is called the Interplanetary File Service, which I thought was very fitting for a piece of Tic Tac art. So I combined the Navy videos that we've all seen with my most popular bit of art, the Tic Tac medallion. And yeah, you can see that on my Twitter.
I still don't understand it, but I would encourage people to check it out. Dan explained it to me as best he could, but the whole cryptocurrency stuff and everything just blows my mind a little bit. But
it's very new, isn't it?
Yeah, and do you know what? If you're one who likes to get on the bandwagon early, you're an early adopter, it's something well worth checking out. And do you know what? You're supporting Dan as well and his art and everything he does in the subject and the topic, which I would always encourage. So again, Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and hearing my waffle.
Anytime. And do you know what? I'll play the usual outro. So I'd suggest you stick around if you've not heard it before, but it is the wonderfully talented Minty Hyperspace, or you may know him as Sean Cahill, with Goblin Problems, with me rambling on a little bit as well, folks. That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, thatufopodcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer. More like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shut down the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little bit.